Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. It is a special day for us here at the show. 5 years ago today, we launched The Jump right here inside ESPN's LA studios. And I am so grateful to the producers, directors, crew, reporters, and players who make this show what it is every day. Most of all, though, to you out there watching. We've done more than 1,000 episodes, had what feels like a million special moments. And now I am thrilled to welcome back to The Jump. You saw him in the clip reel, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. Adam, thank you, everyone at the NBA. Thank you to everyone at NBA Entertainment, the Players Union, for the incredible support we've had over these past 5 years.
Thank you, Rachel. I remember it was your vision to have this show. I remember you coming to me and then your bosses at ESPN and saying, this is something missing in the NBA landscape. We need a daily show. There's so much going on. And just looking back on that highlight reel, so many happy moments, some really sad moments as well. But, you know, thank you and your group, your producers, for the intensity of the coverage you provide. It's fantastic. As you said, it's for the fans at the end of the day. So everyone appreciates it.
Yeah, well, it's a huge, huge group effort here, and especially our Jump family out there participate and are a big part of it. I do want to get your thoughts, Adam, on a couple things since you're here. You guys officially announced the All-Star game today. We've heard players voice concerns over the past couple weeks. So what made you guys decide to still go ahead with the game?
We decided to go forward with it because, well, let me begin it. There's a health crisis in this country. There's an economic crisis. And we made a decision beginning last summer that we were going to take the pandemic on in a full-throated way. And we were going to attempt to conduct our business to the extent it was safe and healthy for our players and our staff to the full extent we could. All-Star has been a tradition in this league now going back 70 years. We only missed 1 year over those 70 years. And for us, it's our number one fan engagement event of the year. Of course, we don't have a neutral site championship. It's an opportunity for the entire NBA community to converge around one event. Now, I recognize, of course, we're not going to have fans this year. But as I've said before, 99% plus of our fans never attend an NBA game. It's a global sport based on historic ratings. Roughly 130 million people globally will tune in for this All-Star game. You know, based on past numbers, something like 100 million people will vote for the All-Stars. We're already up 10% this year. And last year, coming out of our All-Star events, we had over a billion social media moments. So it's, you know, it's a global event for us. And we're making our best effort to embrace all aspects of our league to the extent we can through this pandemic. And this is just one more opportunity. And I'll add, of course, I'm listening to those who don't think it's a good idea. And I think that's been the case in terms of essentially everything we've done since we shut down, you know, a little less than a year ago because of the pandemic. You know, there were obviously those who thought we shouldn't play without fans, those who thought we shouldn't play in a bubble, those who thought we shouldn't restart the holiday season, those who thought we shouldn't be playing in a very serious way because of the social justice issues roiling this country. You know, and so I certainly hear the other side of this issue here. And I'll just lastly say, it seems like no decisions during this pandemic come without uncertainty and come without risk. And this is yet another one of them. But it's my job to balance all those interests. And ultimately, it feels like the right thing to do to go forward.
Well, you mentioned the fans. We saw NFL fans pour into Tampa for the Super Bowl. I know that Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms has told fans not to travel for All-Star Weekend, but how difficult do you expect it to be for fans to comply?
I don't think it'll be that difficult because, and it's amazing what the NFL pulled off, finishing their season and, of course, crowning a champion in Tampa with the Super Bowl. But they had fans. We are not, our event will not be open to the public. We'll have a small number of fans representing HBCUs, which was part of our announcement, Historically Black Colleges and Universities. It was actually Chris Paul's idea to sort of center on those schools and focus attention and resources on that school, plus COVID equity issues in the country. But so there'll be you know, roughly 1,000 people representing those institutions, but there will not be tickets open to the public. And I actually agree with the mayor of Atlanta. We don't want people to gather for events around this All-Star. There will be absolutely no social functions in Atlanta, no ticketed events, no parties. It is a made-for-television event at this point, and it's largely in Atlanta because that's where Turner Sports is located, who host this event. And of course, we have the Hawks and a state-of-the-art arena in State Farm, but that's why we're there. And so we agree with the mayor.
Well, we are coming up on a year since the NBA shut down that night in Utah, the root of having an All-Star game like this, the root of everything we've done in this country in terms of coronavirus. When you look back on how the NBA has weathered such a trying time for the whole country, what do you think of over this past year?
I think of enormous sacrifice on the part of so many. And, you know, of course, I'll begin with what we always refer to as the NBA family. First and foremost, the players, the coaches, the officials, the team staff. I mean, those people who lived in the bubble as you were down there for a long period of time. I mean, for the Lakers who ultimately won the championship. I understand, of course, LeBron's reaction, having spent 3 full months in the bubble. And to his credit, you know, I was down there for a portion of it as well. He never complained. Their team never complained. And there were very few complaints at the end of the day because the guys understood this is what it took to work. And I think, and then we got through that. Then we collectively made a decision with the Players Association that there was no way that this community could live in a bubble over 8 months or so. Then we decided that we would play in home arenas to the extent we could. Dealing with local health officials, we now have 10 arenas or so that allow limited numbers of fans. But there was also a recognition that even if we could play in home arenas, that we were going to have to create a protocol that's referred to essentially as work quarantine, meaning you go to work and you go home, you go to work and you go home. And that's very tough on everybody involved. And so, you know, again, there's been constant sacrifices throughout. But at the same time, you know, we, the league office, working with the Players Association and directly with the players, are always trying to balance these health and safety issues against economic issues and call them lifestyle issues. And part of the lifestyle issue is the isolation that comes, of course, from the worst case scenario is being in a bubble. But even there's a fair amount of isolation for this so-called work quarantine protocol. A lot of our young players don't have families. They're living alone. Some players who are playing in cities where their families don't live made decisions not to relocate their families because it just was best for everyone for whatever reason. So there's a fair amount of isolation. And it's not lost on me. I mean, if you look at the national statistics among young people, you know, in terms of how people have been impacted by the pandemic, it seems like the mental health issues are worse among the young cohort, 18 to 24-year-olds or so, you know, and young people in their 20s, which, of course, comprise a large portion of our league. So there's all these issues that we're trying to factor. And so, you know, at the end of the day, I'd say I'm also enormously proud of this community. And from, you know, the governors of the teams on down, it's been enormous, you know, group effort. At the same time, teams are competing to win. And that's one of the things also that I feel really good about, because as you'll recall, another one of the criticisms of continuing the season last year, restarting it, was that it was going to be a so-called asterisk season.
Right.
And once we got through the bubble and had complete, you know, 4-round, 7-game series in the playoffs into the finals, I haven't heard a single person suggest it's not, you know, my joke was the Lakers should have gotten 2 trophies.
Right. Absolutely. Well, this league has remained a joy to cover, Adam, all these years. Our crew is very grateful. All of our fans out there are very grateful. And thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you again to you and all your folks on 5 years. Quite incredible.
We really appreciate it. Thank you, Adam, so much. Everyone, stick with us, because up next, we are talking about the NBA's hottest team, the Utah Jazz. They've won 20 of their last 21 games. Is this just an amazing hot streak or the beginning of a title run? Richard Jefferson and Brian Windhorst are going to join me next to discuss. We're also going to discuss the amazing Steph Curry performance last night, leading the Warriors to an improbable comeback win. Is Steph's play changing expectations for the Warriors this season? Stick around for that, too.
Y'all thought y'all was going to do a fifth-year anniversary without me? No way, no how. Shout out to the crew, man, at ESPN The Jump for their 5th year anniversary show today. It was amazing 4 years that I was there, but 5 years of great content that y'all putting out to the people. Shout out to my girl, Rachel, who's the most amazing host that you can ever ask for. And shout out to all the hard workers behind the scenes that make us look good. I miss you guys, and it's nothing but love. This is T-Mac. Peace.
Welcome back to The Jump. Big shout out to Tracy McGrady. We could never celebrate something like this without him. And I am now joined by Brian Windhorst, who is here in the studio with me and T-Mac 5 years ago for our very first show, as well as Richard Jefferson, who we checked, Richard, 5 years ago today. You were preparing to drop a five-piece on the Bulls 2016.
Three-pointer and a dunk. That's all I wanted. So that's probably what it was. Wanted to make one three-pointer, one dunk. That's all I needed.
One glass of wine.
Right, that's it.
Well, Brian, you represent all the reporters we have on this show. I want to also make a point of shouting out Zach Lowe and Ramona Shelburne, who have been two of our most regular, frequent contributors all the way through from day one to year five. Thank you guys all for being with us through this whole way, and all the reporters who join our show regularly. We're very, very lucky. All right, let's check out who's in the zone, brought to you by AutoZone. It's the Utah Jazz, who have won 20 of their last 21 games after beating the Clips last night. Now, the Clippers without Kawhi and PG, but the Jazz have been dominant, posting two win streaks of at least 9 games this season. No other team has even won 8 straight at all so far. So, Richard, is this a hot streak or a potential title run?
I think that this is a potential title run. They've done everything that they need to do, in my opinion. Like, this is a team that is top five in points. They're top five in defense. They're number one in rebounding. They're number one in point differential. I'm not even a stats guy, but when you go break down and look at the team stats, these aren't like little bitty moments that they're having. They're actually dominating teams very, very consistently. How they finish is purely up to them.
Yeah, so this is a team that was essentially the same roster as they had a year ago, and they've just exploded and blossomed before our eyes. Now, they're healthy, and their top competition in the West, the Clippers and Lakers, are not, and health is going to be a major factor. But I don't think I've ever seen a team that has been as close to the Spurs of the last title run the Spurs had in 2014 as this team is. And they're coached by a guy in Quinn Snyder who used to be with the Spurs, and run by a guy in Dennis Lindsay who used to be with the Spurs. They share the ball. They rely on a center to defend the front of the rim. They run a very democratic offense. It took, the Spurs were in contention many years. It took a lot of years, a lot of things for them to go right, for them to win titles. I think the Jazz are in contention to win it. Whether they will, let's wait and see. But, man, they're good.
Yeah, whew. Really fun to watch, too. Just they play together, and you can tell that most of that team has been together this whole time in a season where continuity is such an advantage. They are maximizing everything they have to offer. And of course, Quinn Snyder, as you mentioned, fantastic this year and every year. And he is going to be coaching the Western Conference All-Stars, or I guess whoever the Western Conference player selects on his draft team. We'll get to all of that later. All right, let's get to Steph Curry, though, who's still really good. Newsflash, really good, even when he is not at his best on a night where he missed a career-high 15 threes. Curry led the Warriors still to a 15-point fourth-quarter comeback to force overtime, then made a number of key plays down the stretch to seal the win. The Warriors currently seventh in the West. So, Brian, we knew once Klay got hurt again, this was going to be a difficult year for the Warriors, and there was a real range, right, in expectations for them, or what people thought that they could accomplish. Is the way Curry has come back and played changed your expectations for the Dubs for this season?
No, and I don't mean that to sound bad. Like, I thought they were a bubble playoff team, and I expected Steph Curry to be great. I'm one of these people who believe that Steph Curry is a top 10 all-time player. And like last night, as good as he was, that wasn't even a top 10 performance that he's had this season. It was, he was good at the end, but it was kind of just average for him. And that's how much I believe in Steph Curry. That's how much I believe in the Warrior way. And Draymond Green is putting on a clinic on how to win basketball games without scoring this year. It's a joy to watch him play. I still think they're a bubble playoff team. I still think they're going to remain there. I could even argue that it might behoove them, especially considering they have the Minnesota Timberwolves draft pick this year, if it's outside the top three, that it might be best for them to miss the playoffs and get two lottery picks in this draft. But hats off to Steph Curry. He's been great for a long time. He's an MVP candidate. He's not surprising me at all.
That face, Richard, is fantastic. Yes?
No, I understand. There was a lot of things, that we have to unpack that Wendy just said. One, top 10 player. I respect that. I cannot wait to see your top 10 list. And I say this, but knowing that Steph still has more to add to his resume. Next part that I want to talk
three
about is
three titles and two MVPs, Rach. That's a short list.
It's a very short list, and he's going to add to that list before he's done, but I'm just curious to hear your top 10. That being said, the Warriors are right where they are, right where they should be. Steph is having an MVP numbers stats type season, and they're the seventh team in the conference. So, that being said, the best that I think that they could do is possibly a second round. I'm not going to ever say a guy that's having an MVP season that's one of the top 10 players of all time should or maybe their team should think about losing to get a second lottery pick. That's not what top 10 players do. That's not what Steph does. So I think that the Warriors are a very good team. I think a second round, if they're healthy, if they're playing well, but eventually they're going to run into some troubles with a lack of firepower when you start playing against those top teams.
Well, Steph Curry has said it is fun going to the arena every day and just having that challenge of not knowing how a game is going to turn out. There were certainly years where they had pretty serious expectations that they were going to walk into the arena. Or as Draymond Green once put it, when we arrived on the bus, we pretty much knew we were going to win. And he said that he's actually enjoyed the process this year of working his way through games with this team. But of course, he will also enjoy the process next year when Klay Thompson is back and they are once again expected to be championship contenders. All right, guys, stick with us because coming up a little later in the show, we're going to run back the top 10 plays during the jump era, celebrating our 5-year anniversary. You don't want to miss that. And coming up next, we have another guest stopping by who was on our very first show, the one and only Chris Paul. Stick around to hear what his expectations for the Suns are this season, his brand new book, docuseries. He's got it all. Keep it locked. Addicted to blue cheese, I gotta stick to this paper like loose leaf. Bitch, I'm by my chicken like it's a two-piece. In a two-seat.
It's your first day, huh? Hey, come on.
Thanks for the assist, man.
Yeah.
I am thrilled to welcome back 10-time All-Star Chris Paul to the Jump. Chris, you are our very first guest on this date in 2016 when the Jump debuted. It is so great to have you join us again 5 years later. Thank you, sir.
Man, no problem, Rach. It's amazing. Don't seem like it's been that long.
I know, right? We're all getting older. Just don't tell everyone. Chris, it certainly does not look like you are getting older. You are averaging more than 17 points, 8 assists, nearly 5 rebounds in year 16. I just want to know how you were even better than you were 5 years ago when we started this show. What about your game do you think you've gotten better at as you have aged?
I don't know. Maybe attention to detail. You know, just trying to make sure I take care of my body. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. You always want to give yourself an opportunity to be out there on the court to play. And just learning new teammates, the game changes or whatnot. But, you know, when you play for a while, you know, the game slows down for you.
Absolutely. Although I think the game always looked like that to you, if you ask me, after watching your entire career. But I'll take that. I'll take that as an answer. The Suns, of course, haven't made the playoffs since 2010. You've got them competing not just for a postseason berth, but home court advantage in your first year with the franchise. What are your expectations for the team this season?
We just got to keep getting better. Keep getting better. We have somewhat of a young team, but we have, you know, veteran leadership. We got Jay Crowder, who played in the finals last year, who was a great leader on our team. Book, who was unbelievable. And I think we just keep trying to build. You know, we'll have some wins here. We're going to have some losses there. And we just got to keep building so that when we get to the playoffs, at the end of the day, we ready to have each other's backs.
You know, Devin Booker tweeted back in December, CP put me on the line with Hove today, needed that. For those who don't know, Hove is, of course, Jay-Z. Chris, I don't know what that moment was like in terms of seeing Devin's face, but what has it been like mentoring Booker and DeAndre Ayton through this season?
Man, it's been fun in all the situations. This season is like unlike any other season, mm-hmm. right? So you don't really have that time off the court and going to dinner with guys. So you just find ways to get to know each other. A lot of games and a little bit of time. DA is a big guy who's very impressionable and still trying to figure out his way throughout the league. Book is just ready. He hungry. You know, he didn't have teams in this league and whatnot. And I think for him, he just wants the stage. And it's cool to be around him and to see that hunger that he has.
And Monty Williams, too, this is a reuniting for you. What shorthand do you guys have after knowing each other for so long? And what can you say about the job he's done with this team?
Yeah, Coach has been amazing. It's crazy to think 10 years ago was when I played for him last. There's definitely a comfort there. We sort of know how to communicate with each other. We learned things from the last time that teamed up together. And it's a lot of new faces with our team. It's a new organization for me, and it's a fun process. You always learn it. You always learn it.
I want to ask you about what's on your sweatshirt right now, because the Undefeated and ESPN Plus partnering to produce Why Not Us, North Carolina Central University men's basketball. This is an all-access docuseries executive produced by the one and only Chris Paul and our very own Stephen A. Smith as well. It's the first project to debut under the Undefeated on ESPN Plus. So, Chris, what motivated you to become involved with this project?
And what motivated me? You know, everyone in my family attended HBCUs except for me. And so just paying attention to everything that was going on and knowing Lavelle Moten, I've known him for years, and I followed North Carolina Central, Winston-Salem State, North Carolina A&T. I could go on and on with these HBCUs, but Vail, just to be able to follow him and see how he connects with the players, and it's more than just basketball. It's about life. And to be able to tell this story, we're extremely excited about and want to continue to tell these stories.
I'm glad you shouted out Coach Moten. He is one of the best to do it at the college level. And he's a character, yeah, too. So people are going to love following him and his team in this docuseries. But you got other projects going on, too. We just learned yesterday that you're working on a new book, co-authored by our very own Michael Wilbon. It's entitled 61 Life Lessons from Papa on and off the court, to be released in September. What can you tell us about that, especially about the title, since I know it's in honor of your late grandfather?
Yeah, it's been something very fun to work on, you know, especially really closely with Mike Wilbon and my brother. I've got a chance to learn a lot about myself in doing this. It's about my late grandfather who was murdered when I was in high school. I was 17 years old then. I'm 35 now. So I've got a chance to see how that has affected me up to this point in life. And, you know, it's cool to be able to share like a snapshot of my journey and what my life has been like and the things that my late grandfather instilled in me at an early age.
I love being around your family. Your brother, who you mentioned, CJ, has been an incredible partner with you throughout your career. And I'm very fond of your parents, Chris, so I'm thrilled to hear a little bit about more about them in this book as well. 5 years, it has been 5 years since you walked onto it. We had a whole different set at that point. What do you remember from that day 5 years ago?
Man, I remember coming in and he was telling me that this was the first episode, right? It was... You ain't have all the bells and whistles
nope.
You got now.
Nope.
You ain't have all that. You big time now, Rach. You got guest appearances day in and day out, everybody trying to be on the jump. But I think it's a testament to our game, what you're doing, and you know, it's dope. So big shout out and congratulations to you.
Well, we appreciate that. It is a testament to the game, to the sport, to the players who play it, because that is who people are tuning in for every day. It was not quite me and T-Mac standing in front of a chalkboard, but you're right, it was close. So we appreciate the growth of the show since then, and we certainly appreciate you. I am so excited to see all these projects come to fruition, especially your project with the Phoenix Suns. You are on a playoff course this year, my friend. We're looking forward to it.
Thank you so much, Ray.
Thank you. Always so fun. Coming up, we're running back the top 10 plays during the five-year run of this show. This is a hard top 10 to crack. You'll see why next. First, though, here's what the Jump recommends for today. The NBA Jump Twitter feed. This is the fan page for our show. It was created in 2017 by our friend Devin. Since then, he's become the unofficial home of all things Jump on Twitter. Everyone on our staff really appreciates the work he puts into the account, his passion for the show, and all of you guys out there. We'll be right back. All right, we're almost out of time for today, so let's preview the huge game on TNT tonight. Nets are in LA, taking on the defending champion Lake Show. KD, and AD have both been ruled out. If you have a D at the end of your name, you cannot play. Kyrie probable, both Harden and LeBron expected to be in action. Brian, you wrote a great piece on the app today about how the MVP narrative favors LeBron for the first time in 8 years. So do you expect him to make an MVP statement tonight against Brooklyn?
Yeah, not just tonight, but while AD is out between now and the All-Star break, if LeBron can continue to play well, there's no reason why he won't. He's having a spectacular season, and he can keep the Lakers near the top of the standings. They've got the second-best record in the league right now. It will help his case for MVP, and I know that you shouldn't think that LeBron would have to build a case at this point, but we often see the MVP narrative get shaped around midseason. LeBron has a great chance to shape the narrative by playing great tonight and playing great over these next 3 weeks.
I'll agree with playing over the next 3 weeks. I don't know about tonight, because even if Bron goes and has 40 points and plays a great game, you know what the narrative is going to be, because that's what we're talking about. Oh, well, they didn't have Kevin Durant, right? So it's like, you know, it doesn't matter. Yes, that team on the Brooklyn side is still loaded. Yes, the Lakers still have plenty of talent, but people want to see the best versus the best. And when you looked at Bron really kind of start to gain ground on the MVP last year, is because they beat the Bucks with Giannis. They beat the Clippers with Paul George and Kawhi. So to beat a Nets team, which could be a future potential finals matchup without Kevin Durant, it's going to help. I think the biggest thing, like Wendy said, is over the next couple of weeks with no AD, can the old man keep up the performance of what he's been doing?
From one old man to another, I want to thank you guys both for being here today. Thanks to everyone out there. 5 amazing years, and a special shout out to our core crew behind the scenes who launched the show. Connor, Kevin, Rochelle, producer Danny, producer Steve, producer Bob, Regina, and everyone who has come since make us what we are today.